Turn to Proverbs 11:13. It's going to be a short one tonight, I think, because this one's not very long, and the next one is quite long, way too long to do in one, or to add on to this one anyway. So it'll take as long as it takes tonight, and then we might get out of here a little early. Proverbs 11 and verse 13. It says, "A talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter." A talebearer revealeth secrets. Let's define those terms. A talebearer is one who officiously carries reports of private matters to gratify malice or idle curiosity. To reveal is to disclose, make known to one in a supernatural manner, like if the Lord revealed something to us. It's secondly to disclose, divulge, make known to one by discourse or communication, and that would be how the talebearer revealeth secrets. He doesn't do so supernaturally, he just does so by blabbing his mouth, right? He revealeth secrets, which are, a secret is kept from knowledge or observation, hidden, concealed. Predicatively, especially in to keep secret, it means kept from public knowledge or from the knowledge of persons specified, not allowed to be known, or only by select persons. So if you put the definitions into the verse, we see that there are people who intentionally disclose private information to others which was supposed to be kept from public knowledge, for the purpose of gratifying malice or idle curiosity. And in one aspect, we have too many talebearers among us, and we've probably been some of them. And in another aspect, we don't have enough talebearers, because whistleblowers in government are talebearers too. And that would be a good talebearing, because there's not supposed to be secrets in government. They're supposed to be open, and they work for us, right? They're supposed to tell us what's going on, unless it was a matter of national security or something. But somebody like Edward Snowden, you could say he's a talebearer, but he wasn't doing it for malicious intent. He was doing it to, you know, get information out to people so that they know it. But anyway, that's really, I just had that thought, and I thought I'd share it with you, but that's not really what I'm going to talk about tonight. So in Leviticus 19:16, the Lord straightly forbids talebearing. Leviticus 19 and verse 16. You can go through your Bible, get a concordance, and you're not going to find anything good said about talebearing. Not that I'm aware of, anyway. Leviticus 19:16 says, "Thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord." There is a place, and we'll get to this later on in the study, when it talks about those who carry tales to shed blood, and this is alluding to that, not standing against the blood of thy neighbor by bearing tales which could end up getting him killed or something. But notice it says there that talebearers go up and down among the people, like up and down the street, up and down the neighborhood, right? Up and down like that. The problem is, in some cases anyway, is that people who are not working productively have lots of time to be busybodies and gossip. And Paul got on the Thessalonian church about that in 2 Thessalonians 3:11. Just think about a time, or think about a day in your life when you were really busy working, getting things done, really focused. How much gossiping did you do that day? Probably none, right? But then you think about when you're just sitting around, nothing to do, and you're chatting with people, and before you know it, what happens, right? That's when people start talking about other people. So it's good to keep yourself busy. As they say, idle hands are the devil's workshop. 2 Thessalonians 3:11. 2 Thessalonians 3:11. That's 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians 3:11. "For we hear that there are some which walk among you disorderly, not working at all, but are busybodies." So they're busy, but not busy with anything productive. They're just busy, you know, getting in other people's business. Really, that's what a busybody is. I don't have the definition, but it's somebody who is officiously involved in matters that don't belong to them. So that often carries with it the idea of talebearing, because they're busy in business not belonging to them, talking to somebody about somebody else and spreading tales and things like that. And then I probably don't need to tell you this, but women are especially prone to this, especially young widows, the scripture teaches us. I don't know what it is, but women do have women in general have a reputation for gossiping and talking about others. I mean, they don't have a corner on it. Men certainly do that as well. But Paul taught this in 1 Timothy 5:13 through 14. Now, I will say, and I don't think this is in the outline either, but talebearers, though wicked, can be useful, because if you need to find out information about something that's going on, chances are you can find one that's going to tell you the information that you need. But secondly, if you want to disseminate information and you just really don't feel like telling everybody yourself, you know, there are certain people that if you tell them something, and especially if you say, hey, don't tell anybody else this, you can guarantee that everybody's going to find out really quickly. So sometimes it's just easy just to find that one person and tell that person, and you know that it's going to be spread around if it's something that you want, you know, people to know, and you just don't feel like going to all the trouble of calling everybody yourself. So you just tell that certain person, and that she or he takes care of it for you.
That's very efficient.
It is. 1 Timothy 5:13 through 14. 1 Timothy 5:13. And with all, this is talking about widows, young widows. And with all, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house. Remember Leviticus, they go up and down. Right? And not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will therefore that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully. So Paul's solution to this problem of young widows who are going from house to house, talking when they should be doing something else, was get married, have children, guide the house, take care of domestic responsibilities. And if you're a woman and you've got a number of children, you probably don't have a whole lot of time to be gossiping and talebearing about everything that's going on, because you have plenty to keep yourself occupied with. I'll just read this one to you, because I think it's powerful. Those who have nothing to do but talk to others will inevitably end up talking about others and revealing information that should have been kept secret. If you have nothing to do but talk to others, you're going to end up talking about others. That often happens when conversations go on for a long time. Usually somebody ends up being the subject of it. Then things are said that probably shouldn't be. So if you want to keep yourself from trouble, keep your mouth shut when it comes to revealing private things about others. Now, all talking about others is not forbidden. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, you know, did you hear that brother so-and-so just got a new job? Isn't that great? He's really doing well for himself, right? There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But when you say, hey, I just heard brother so-and-so got fired, and you know what? I'll bet you it's because that guy was just sitting around not doing anything on the job. I've seen him before. I know how he is. That's a big difference between that one and the previous one, right? So you're both talking about somebody, but big difference, right? Proverbs 21 and verse 23. There's an old saying, your mother probably taught it to you, that if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. Of course, there's limitations to that, because sometimes rebukes aren't nice and, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, in general, it's not a bad rule to live by. Proverbs 21 and verse 23 says, whoso keepeth his mouth and his tongue keepeth his soul from troubles. We all know that's true. We all have plenty of times where we wish we would have kept our mouth shut. It would have saved us trouble with other people or with God, for that matter. The thing about talebearers is they cause strife and they can separate friends. Proverbs 26 and verse 20, first of all. Because in my example, what do you think that brother so-and-so that just lost his job is going to think of the guy that just spread a rumor that he lost his job and why he probably lost it when that gets back to him? Strife. He's going to be upset, right? He's not going to be happy about that. Proverbs 26 and verse 20, it says, where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. So if you have strife, if there's strife in a church, chances are there's probably talebearing going on in the church. Somebody was probably talking about other people's business, especially in a negative light. That could definitely be a cause of strife. And like I said, that can separate friends. Proverbs 16 and verse 28. It says, a froward man soweth strife, and a whisperer separateth chief friends. And you can imagine if some friend in a foolish moment said something, he was irritated with his close friend and he said something negative about that close friend, and then the talebearer says, hey, did you hear what he said about you? Right? Talebearer can easily divide up that friendship when it didn't need to happen. Talebearers can cause emotional wounds by betraying trust. There's nothing worse, I shouldn't say nothing worse, but it's a grievous thing if you were to confide in somebody and tell them something that clearly you wanted kept secret. Either you said, keep this secret, or it's just obvious, the nature of the thing, and then that person goes out and intentionally spreads it around. It's bad enough if they accidentally let it slip out, and that happens sometimes. I mean, we should be really careful about that, but it's one thing if it accidentally slips out. It's another thing when it's intentional. That's a deep wound. Proverbs 18 and verse 8 says, the words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly. So it goes right down deep into the soul. Like that really, really hurts when somebody does not keep a secret, shares information that you confided in them with, to, and they break that confidence.
Pastor Wagner, would you trust that person again in the future? Would it be wrong if the person thinks, I would never trust that person ever again? Not giving him another chance.
No, if you knew it was intentional, yeah. If it was accidental and they just slipped up and let it slip out and they weren't thinking, then no, I think mercy would be in order. But if somebody intentionally betrayed your trust and you knew it, I wouldn't trust the person again. I mean, not until they really had proved themselves.
She's saying there's... Oh, to forgive is not to forget.
Yeah, there is. David's an example of that. I was just reading through David's life in 1 Samuel, and there were at least two different times where Saul gave like a heartfelt apology and said, you're more righteous than I, and blah, 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 and mm-hmm. made amends with David. But you notice, and the Bible doesn't make a big deal about it, but David stayed in the field. David did not go back with Saul, back to Jerusalem, which tells me that, yeah, he forgave him, but he didn't trust him, and he wasn't going to put himself in that position again. So, yeah, there's nothing wrong with forgiving, but still being wary of somebody. Especially, you know, depending on the severity of the transgression. Some talebearers even go to the point of carrying tales to shed blood, which I just mentioned a minute ago. We read about that in Ezekiel 22 and verse 9. Ezekiel 22:9. I'll give you some examples of this in a minute. Ezekiel 22... In verse 9, it says, in thee are men that carry tales to shed blood, and in thee they eat upon the mountains, in the midst of thee they commit lewdness. I think about the Bush administration. Those people carried tales to shed blood. Remember weapons of mass destruction, mobile biological weapons labs in Iraq that are, they go from place to place and the inspectors can't find them because they're on the run and they're, you know, they got these little food trucks that are producing biological weapons or something, and all these lies carried tales to shed blood, and shed blood they did to the tune of about 1 million Iraqis that certainly didn't deserve that. The Gulf of Tonkin Bay in Vietnam, carry tales. Made up some story about some boat getting attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin, never happened, launched the Vietnam War, right? The Pearl Harbor was kind of the same thing, where it happened, but they knew it was going to happen, and so they basically made up a bunch of tales saying that, oh, it was just an unprovoked attack, even though we put an embargo on Japan and then cracked their code and knew that the attack was coming and allowed it to happen anyway to get us into World War II. Carry tales to shed blood. So, the first Gulf War, I don't know if you remember this or not, the tale was that the Iraqis, when they invaded Kuwait, were going into hospitals and taking babies out of incubators and throwing them on the floor and killing babies in incubators in hospitals. And this young little Kuwaiti girl comes over and testifies before Congress saying that this is happening in Kuwait and it's just a travesty. She just happens to be the ambassador's daughter. Huh, who would have thought? Carry tales, just lies, total lies. Carry tales and shed blood. And there are just so many examples throughout history. Those are just a few. So there are people out there that do that. They have no scruples and no qualms.
Would it also be like in the case of Mordecai, when the people had to tell that he wouldn't bow down to Haman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That would be an example. Jezebel with Naboth.
The false witnesses.
Yeah, carry tales, basically, you know, made up stuff and caused his death. So, it happens. How about the Lord Jesus Christ? They carried tales, they made up stories, they accused him of things he never did to shed blood. Right? I mean, there are tons of examples throughout Scripture and history. Now, another thing about talebearers is that they're often flatterers. So if you want to avoid being the victim of a talebearer, if you find a flatterer, do not divulge personal information to that man or woman, because chances are they're going to go and spread it around. Proverbs 20 and verse 19. So this is good wisdom here. If you can learn to identify people before they've even exposed themselves. So if you know in your mind, somebody that flatters also bears tales. So when I find somebody that's flattering me, even though I don't know for sure that this person spreads a bunch of secrets, if he or she is flattering me, then chances are they're also a talebearer. Therefore, I want to keep my mouth shut around this person. If this person's telling me all these things that are inflated and overstated about me and how wonderful I am, chances are there's something going on and I want to not share information with this person because he or she's probably going to use it against me. Why do you think he's flattering you? He that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. Right? He's doing it for a purpose. Proverbs 20 and verse 19. He that goeth about as a talebearer revealeth secrets, therefore meddle not with him that flattereth with his lips. So a flatterer and a talebearer go hand in hand. Now let's look at the second half of that proverb. But he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. So this opens up with that contrasting conjunction, but, which means that it's tying it and contrasting it with what was previously spoken. So these things are not unrelated. A faithful spirit concealing a matter is directly related to a talebearer revealing secrets. Faithful is, when you're speaking of persons, their actions, etc., is full of or characterized by faith, believing. It's also firm in fidelity or allegiance to a person to whom one is bound by any tie, constant, loyal, true. It's true to one's word or professed belief, abiding by a covenant or promise, steadfast. Of persons or in their conduct, it's conscientious, thorough in the fulfillment of duty. Of persons in their actions, it means that may be believed or relied upon, trustworthy, veracious. So somebody who is first and foremost full of faith is a person of faith, and then a person who is firm in fidelity and allegiance to a person, somebody who's true to their word, somebody who's conscientious and will do what they say they're going to do, fulfill their duties, and somebody who can be believed and trusted. Right? So all of that is wrapped into a faithful person. He that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. A spirit is the animating or vital principle in man and animals. Remember it says the spirit of man goeth upward, the spirit of beast goeth downward to the earth. So there's a spirit in animals too, and this definition gets that right. That which gives life to the physical organism, in contrast to its purely material elements, the breath of life. When the spirit departs, the body dies, right? So that's the life-giving principle. A particular character, disposition, or temper existing in, pervading, or animating a person or set of persons. A special attitude or bent of mind characterizing men individually or collectively. So the spirit, you know, like the spirit in which you do something, right? It's used in that way. Or the spirit, the spirit of the American people, right? Whatever that is. Whatever used to be something very different than it is today. But, you know, you get the idea. And then conceal. So he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. To conceal is to keep from the knowledge or observation of others, refrain from disclosing or divulging, keep close or secret. So in other words, a trustworthy man who is loyal and true to those who confide in him will refrain from disclosing private information that is to be kept secret from others. That's a faithful person, in other words, can keep secrets. Will not tell something that you told him in confidence. So a faithful man can keep a secret, an unfaithful man cannot. And faithful men are hard to find. And I have a proverb here which will tell us this. Proverbs 20 and verse 6. I'm pretty hard on humankind, myself included, but this is not my opinion when I say that it's hard to find a faithful man. The Bible teaches us this. Proverbs 20 and verse 6 says, "Most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness, but a faithful man who can find?" Kind of like that virtuous woman, you know, she's rare, right? Solomon said that he'd found one man in 1,000. You know, a faithful man who can find? It's a rhetorical question. It means there's not too many of them out there. So, consequently, this means that those who can keep secrets are rare to come by. Because if a faithful man is a man that can keep secrets, and a faithful man is hard to find, that means it's hard to find a person that can keep secrets, right? If you put it together. So, have you ever, and I know you have you ever had somebody come up to you, or maybe you've said it yourself, and he says, "Hey, don't tell anybody I told you this, and I wasn't supposed to tell anybody, but I know that you won't say anything, so just don't say anything." Have you ever had somebody do that? I'm sure, of course you have, right? All the time. "Don't tell anybody I told you this, I'm not supposed to say anything, but," and then they go about and tell you.
Especially at work.
Anywhere. Yeah, but I know I can trust you. You know who you can't trust? The guy that's telling you the thing. That says that I can trust you. You know who you can't? You can't trust him. Because guess what? If he's telling you something that I'm not supposed to tell anybody, but I know I can tell you, he's not trustworthy, right? So would you ever want to tell that guy anything that you didn't want anybody else to know? Of course not, because you know what he's going to say to the next guy he meets? "Hey, I got something to tell you. I'm not supposed to say anything, but I know you won't say anything," right? And it's a good thing to do. It's hard to do. because everybody loves to hear something that you're not supposed to hear.
Of course.
I mean, that's human nature. If somebody says, hey, I'm not supposed to tell you, but, and you're just on the edge of your seat, like, oh, I can't wait to hear it. But what you should do, I've not always done this. I have done this sometimes, mm-hmm. but I have not done it every time. Mm-hmm. When somebody says, I'm not supposed to tell you this, just say, stop. Don't tell me. If you're not supposed to tell me, don't tell me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's easier said than done. Now, being faithful in keeping secrets is indicative of good character and will result in future blessings. I got some verses here that'll show us this. If a man proves himself to be faithful and trustworthy in little things, like keeping secrets, and using discretion when it comes to his mouth, he will be trusted by others to take care of greater things. Let's look at Matthew 25 and verse 21. And I'll tell you what, if I was a company owner and I had employees, one thing that I might do is come up to one of my employees and say, hey, I need to tell you something, but you can't tell anybody else this. Okay, I'm gonna confide in you, and I don't want this to go any further than this conversation. And tell him something that he would want to tell other people and that, you know, would be really interesting to tell other people. Maybe it doesn't even have to be true, for that matter. Just to see if the guy can keep his mouth shut or not. And if the rumor gets spread around the company, then I know, well, I can't trust that guy. That'd be a pretty good idea, I think.
Loyalty test.
Mm-hmm. I remember in that book that I read a while back, The Persecutor, one thing when Sergei Kordakov was in that school, it was probably like a middle schooler school, where all the kids, you know, got shipped off to, where they get taken from their parents or whatever, and there was a light bulb that was burnt out. I don't know if it was actually burnt out, but it wasn't working anyway, and they set up a bunch of chairs on top of tables or something, so that he could climb up there and stand on these chairs to take out the light bulb and change it. And as soon as he got up to the top, they said, now, and they ripped out the chairs and he'd come crashing down. And I'm sure it would, you know, obviously be very painful. You'd break your neck or something. But he didn't snitch on them. And then they took him into their inner circle. And that was the test. The test was, are you going to snitch on us? And if you snitch on us, we can't trust you. But, you know, I mean, can't trust you. I mean, they just did something nasty to you. But the point is, can you be abused and just keep your mouth shut about it and not go whine like a baby? And so anyway, I don't recommend doing something like that. But that was an interesting way of finding out who's made out of some decent material to work with. Matthew 25 and verse 21. Jesus says, this is the parable of the talents, where he gave 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 5. And the guy with the 5 talents that made 5 talents more, he said, his Lord said unto him, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. So just simply being able to keep a secret, to keep something confident, that's a little thing, right? But if you can be faithful in that, men will trust you with a lot more, because that's indicative of the kind of character that you have. If you can be faithful in a little thing, you can be faithful in a big thing. Let's look at Luke 12 and verse 42. And the Lord said, who then is that faithful and wise steward whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household to give him their meat in due season? Who does he make ruler over his household? The faithful and wise steward. Right? The man who had proven himself to be trustworthy. He gets put over the whole house. Think about Joseph. Joseph was faithful in that which was little, and it wasn't even all that little. With Potiphar, he was put in charge of Potiphar's house, and Potiphar was a pretty wealthy man. And Joseph was faithful in every little thing that he did, and Potiphar put him in charge of everything. Same thing with the Pharaoh. When the Pharaoh could see that Joseph was a faithful man, put him in charge of the whole kingdom. Seest thou a man diligent in his business? He shall stand before kings. He shall not stand before mean men, the scripture says. Let's look at Luke 19 and verse 17. Luke 19:17. This is a similar parable. This is the parable of the pounds, similar to the parable of the talents, but not the same. And he said unto him, "Well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities. In this one, he gave each of them 1 pound. So he gave them each a very little amount. And that man was faithful with that little bit, and he made him ruler over 10 cities. If a man demonstrates himself to be unfaithful in keeping little secrets and personal information private, he is not trustworthy to be entrusted with greater responsibility. Luke 16:10-12. Now, I've never had any kind of a clearance or anything, but I can imagine somebody that goes through a top secret clearance, they probably really vet that person to see if that person is trustworthy and can keep secrets, obviously, right? If you have a top secret clearance, you're privy to a lot of secrets that they do not want to get out.
I had one of those. I had top secret in
the Navy. Top secret, really?
That's what I did.
Hmm. Yeah. Did they, what kind of a proving process was that?
It took about 6 weeks.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm.
Wow.
And then we have our current president.
Wow. That guy, he just doesn't have the mental capacity to keep a secret. Or... Luke 16:10-12. The good thing about somebody like him, though, is that if he spews something out, nobody would think he's not keeping a secret. They wouldn't believe what he said anyway. He's probably just talking nonsense. Luke 16:10-12. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore ye have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? If I watched a man steal a pack of gum from a supermarket that was worth 25 cents, and I'm probably dating myself now because I'm sure it's probably $1.50 now or something, but whatever it costs, I don't buy gum. But if I saw somebody steal a pack of gum, I wouldn't trust him with anything. I wouldn't say, well, you know, he'd steal a pack of gum, but he certainly wouldn't rip me off by $100,000 in my company or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, right. I mean, if he steals a pack of gum, what else would he do? I mean, what kind of a guy steals a pack of gum that you could easily buy, right? I mean, that's a low life. So it wouldn't take anything to make you realize somebody's not faithful. And this principle is true. I've witnessed this. He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful in much, and he that is unjust in the least is unjust in much. I've witnessed over my years church members who made very little, who gave very little, and then they were promoted and made a lot, and they still gave a little. Right? So they're unfaithful in the least, and they were unfaithful in much. Right? So if they're given much, they're no better than they were when they had little. And then I've seen the opposite. I've seen people that were faithful in the least, and then when they were blessed and promoted, they were faithful with much. Right? So whatever they were given, they were faithful with. So I've witnessed that in my life before. It's especially important for pastors to be faithful in keeping secrets. If a pastor cannot keep a secret, he should not be a pastor. Because, you know, people confide in pastors about things, and they expect or should expect that he keeps those things private. 1 Corinthians 4:1-2. 1 Corinthians 4:1-2. Let a man so account of us as of the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. So the ministers of Christ are stewards of God, and it's required that stewards are faithful. So a pastor being a steward, being a minister, must be faithful, which means that he must be able to keep secrets. A pastor's wife likewise must be faithful. And one of those things would be in keeping secrets. I got to tie a couple of verses together to prove this, but 1 Timothy 3:11. 1 Timothy 3:11. This is speaking of the deacons, the qualifications for the deacons. It says, "Even so must their wives be grave, not slanderers, sober, faithful in all things, even in the little things." Now he says there, he's talking about deacons, but he says in verse 8 when he starts talking about the deacons, likewise must the deacons be grave. Likewise, what does that mean? It means like what he was talking about before. What was he talking about before? Bishops or pastors. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, and so on. So a deacon must be like the pastor, and his wife must be faithful in all things. So what's that mean? A pastor's wife must be faithful in all things as well. No, you didn't. Now, this one would make some people furl their eyebrows. But a faithful man or woman might even have to lie at times to keep secret information secret. There are times to lie. Look at Joshua 2 and verse 14. I mean, what if you knew where your neighbor kept his huge stash of cash in his house, and then somebody said, "Hey, where's your neighbor keep his cash in his house?" And you'd be like, "Well, I can't tell a lie. Well, it's down in the corner of the basement underneath that thing, you know." Of course you say, "I don't know. That's a lie." Or you say, "Well, he keeps it. He's not an idiot. He keeps it at the bank in a safety deposit box. That's a lie." Or, you know, but if you say, "Well, I can't tell you," or something, I mean, I guess you could say that, but then he would know you know, and then that could be bad. So there are times where it is permissible, in fact, even required to lie, especially if it's about protecting life, or in this case, protecting a secret which could result in somebody's death. This is Rahab the harlot, Joshua 2 and verse 14. You remember this story, I presume. It says, "And the men answered her, 'Our life for yours, if ye utter not this our business. And it shall be, when the Lord hath given us the land, that we will deal kindly and truly with thee.'" So she was to keep their business secret. And if she did, her life would be preserved. If she didn't, well, maybe both of their lives wouldn't be preserved because they could end up getting caught. And then she's not going to be delivered either. Now, if you turn back to verses 4 through 5, we'll see here that she lied to keep their business a secret. Verse 4, "And the woman took the two men and hid them and said thus, 'There came men unto me, but I wist not whence they were.'" She's flat out lying. "And it came to pass about the time of shutting of the gate, when it was dark, that the men went out. Whither the men went, I wot not. Pursue after them quickly, for ye shall overtake them." She totally made that up. So they took off. They went out through the gate. I don't know where they went. They were upstairs on the roof underneath some bundles of flax. She lied. She kept their business private. And she's called a woman of faith for that. Hebrews 11 and verse 31. Hebrews 11, 31. It says, "By faith, the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace." She did that by faith. She lied by faith. You can lie by faith. Mm-hmm. You can.
She would have risked her life, too, because those people might not have believed her and then entered her house. You understand what I'm saying? Entered her house and then searched for the men. So she was also risking her life by lying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, "Oh, are you sure they're not there? And if they're here, you're going
to
die too."
No, that's why you have to be. That's why you have to be a good liar.
She had the faith that the Lord will take care
yes.
of her.
Yes, yes, she did. James 2:25. "Likewise also was not Rahab the harlot justified by her works when she had received the messengers and sent them out another way?" Let me interpret that for you. Was she not justified by works when she lied? When she sent the messengers out another way, she lied to do that. It's literally saying she was justified because she lied. She was shown to be righteous because she lied to save life. And I'll give you one more example. Jeremiah 38, 24 through 27. Now, of course, I know I've taught this before. I am not giving license to lie, to bear false witness against your neighbor, mm-hmm. to lie to get yourself out of trouble, to, you know, to do anything like that that the Scripture, of course, forbids. But to lie to save life, it's not only acceptable, it is required. Jeremiah 38, 24 through 27. Then said Hezekiah unto Jeremiah, let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die. Jeremiah and Hezekiah had a talk, and Jeremiah had told him to not be afraid of the Jews, you know, that are fallen to the Chaldees and so on. So Zedekiah was concerned about what was going to happen to him, and Jeremiah was telling him, you know, just, you know, don't worry about them and just trust in the Lord. Anyway, Zedekiah didn't want anybody to know what he and Jeremiah had talked about. Okay? And he says, let no man know of these words, and thou shalt not die. But if the princes hear that I have talked with thee, and they come unto thee, and say unto thee, declare unto us now what thou hast said unto the king, hide it not from us, and we will not put thee to death, also what the king said unto thee. Then thou shalt say unto them, I presented my supplication before the king, that he would not cause me to return to Jonathan's house to die there. Then came all the princes unto Jeremiah and asked him, and he told them according to all these words that the king had commanded. And they left off speaking with him, for the matter was not perceived. That king wanted his business with Jeremiah kept private and secret, and he even told Jeremiah to lie to keep the secret, and Jeremiah did it, and God blessed it. Those people had no right to know the truth. They had no right to ask what that conversation was about, and Jeremiah would have been a fool to tell them because then they would have killed him. So there's nothing wrong with lying to keep a secret secret if the secret's a, you know, a good, permissible thing. If it's not some secret, you know, some reprehensible evil thing, some plot against the righteous or something like that, of course, you wouldn't want to keep that secret. So that takes care of Proverbs 11 and verse 14. So just remember, you want to be faithful in that which is little. You want to keep secrets, you want to keep things confident, you want somebody to be able to trust you, that when they tell you something that is supposed to be kept between the two of you, you keep it between the two of them and you don't tell anybody else. And if you do that, you'll be blessed with a lot more trust and confidence, both by men and the Lord. So next time we'll pick it up at verse 14.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches. to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.